Okay, New Jersey finally brought this management and resource monitoring, so I couldn't have picked a plainer title following Dr. Pierce's eloquence there. It looks kind of like another revolution coming out of, American Revolution coming out of the Commonwealth. But this is what it is. So I better have a good message here, get your attention. This PowerPoint is going to be a little different. I'm going to give you some background information, some historic information. I'm going to give you a little bit of data. And then the last slide on this presentation is essentially I'm going to ask you questions to help me answer a perplexing management situation that New Jersey is currently facing, primarily under Amendment 3 to the ASMLC plan. So let's get started. Here's a picture of New Jersey's commercial spiny dogfish landings, and let me tell you that this pattern is similar for some other coastal states. North Carolina comes to mind, Maryland comes to mind, and as you know, everybody set the plate for me this morning on what was going on, but when you had it declared overfished and the emergency action of the ASMFC went into effect, this was a directed fishery in New Jersey. We had relatively no regulations on spiny dogfish. We had some significant landings. I think the average for this 11-year period is about 3.5 million pounds. And so these were the good days. And then why the drought? Here there's just no effort. And here, as a result of management actions or regulatory restrictions that don't make the fishery feasible. No, I keep getting that same thing. Thanks, gentlemen. Okay, now in our regulatory, in our codified regulations, which go along about 67 pages, this is the entire section on spiny dogfish. We have 10 pages on summer flounder, 5 on horseshoe crabs. This is the entire text. And I took the liberty to underline the key theme here is that when ASMLC took emergency action, and we essentially fell under the management regime of the federal government, and we didn't develop a state-specific spiny dogfish fishery. We were busy with summer flounder, black seagrass, bluefish, et cetera, et cetera. So basically it said whatever, you need a NIMS permit, you need a NIMS permit through a dealer, daily tripling is set by NIMS, and the closure by NIMS, and there was no more fishery. I mean, the trip limits, there was no incentive to get enough fish, no shoreside sport. It wasn't economical to have a fishery. So, hence, you have the demise of our spiny dogfish fishery. So, starting in February of 2007, and I'm new to this bus, I'm a new guy too, because Bruce Freeman retired a couple of years ago. I've been thrown into a lot of Mid-Atlantic Council, ASMLC Management Board program. And when I was first exposed to spiny dogfish, it was at the ASMLC board level. And as a result of these diverging quotas, the 4 million versus now the 8 million, we have worked with the Garden State Seafood Association in particular, and a lot of the gill netters, to design a directed spiny dogfish fishery in state waters. And this is what we came up with. We have draft regulations that we're trying to finalize, and I'm looking for your help on this, on some of these issues. So, we need to get some kind of a license for spiny dogfish fishermen and a dealer permit, because right now it's all federal permit, federal dealer. But we want to operate under the state system. So, hence our dilemma. We talked to the fishermen, and they're looking at gillnet fishery, maximum stretch 5.5 inch, springtime summer fishery, annual quota, so it's now 8 million pounds, 3,000 pound trip limit, one fishing trip per week, net tenant, and dealer reporting. This is what we have designed with the fishermen in New Jersey, and we've gone through Trenton meetings with the State People's Association and the commissioner, deputy commissioner level, our Marine and Fisheries Council have had probably six separate committee meetings on coming up with these specs, okay? So this is what we envision in New Jersey when we get our state-by-state allocation. We want to know what it is. Okay, so that's kind of like where we are in the management process. And as far as resource monitoring, I just want to give you a little background on, I should go back a little bit. When we started designing this fishery here, we figured we're going by the messages, 90% of the stock, male fine dogfish. We'll set the next size, we're going to do the environment any harm. Certainly please the recreational guys. Commercial fishermen make a lot of money. So this was in February of 2007 when we first had our meeting in Trenton. And then, you know, sometimes we think ahead and we get data before the fact. And during our trawl survey, which has been operating since 1988, and it's just like the men's trawl, randomly stratified, five cruises a year. You don't need to know the specs, but they're up there if you want to read them later. These are the areas we sampled. And when we designed the survey in 1988 and got this left in mind, we essentially mimicked the inshore component of the NIMS survey. These are the exact same strata that at the 5, 10, and 15 fathom lines. We have the same numbers for the different strata. And we sampled from about out to 8 miles here down to about 12 miles here. And this we've been doing this for 20 years now, almost 20 years. And we have five cruises a year. So we are definitely, if we had any bias in this sample, we were targeting the innermost stratum because of limitations on bigger vessels taking trawl surveys. So we designed this for a near shore out to 90 feet. So in 2007, I asked the crew to, I told them, I said, you know, we're designing a survey on tiny dogfish, and we're hoping that we get the male component, and we don't injure the 20 female component. So why don't you go out and inspect all the tiny dogfish? And it's just another demand on them, but I said, okay, we'll start doing it. This is just a typical picture of our trawl survey. You know, everything comes in, you catch, measure, weigh everything, subsample when you need to. Overflowed the checker, but that's basically what it looks like. There's nothing, it mimics the NIMS trawl survey. We even use the same log sheets. So, that's how we designed it. And then, I gotta put a, you know, here's our most famous, New Jersey sea creature, Horseshoe Crab, little clean operation of the trawl survey. Okay, so here's a broad brush, glimpse of what we pulled out of the, 20 year or 19 years of our trawl survey. This is the mean, and these are the CPUEs on an annual basis. This particular point here, which we were looking at yesterday, this is highly influenced by a single catch of 2,700 tiny dogfish. And if you took that point out, it'd be like four. So, I know in stock assessment there are better ways to, I just want to give you a glimpse of the time series. And what I would recommend is either concentrate, you get a trend analysis, you get a return analysis if you pick like the April cruise or the June cruise when the incidence of tiny dogfish and the catch, you know, they're close to find your data so that you get more precise estimates of CPUE and then have confidence intervals. So, what did we learn from 2007 on getting the sex ratio males and females? Okay, well, in the April cruise, tiny dogfish were caught in 31 of 40 samples. Typically, we get 40 or 39 samples per cruise. And the June, they're pretty ubiquitous, too. You can see the seasonal, again, the frequency of occurrence. And then, lo and behold, we sexed just about every one of them that we caught. And the percent females, outside of these two numbers, in October and January are predominantly 100% female, 721 of them. So now we're scratching our head, 98.9 when we got over 1,000 in that cruise. So now we're scratching our head and saying, You know, we started developing this fishery under addendum. Well, addendum 3 wasn't developed yet, but we were starting to develop a state-specific fishery that was targeting primarily males. So it's like, what are we doing here? And this is just a graphic presentation of the previous chart that shows the high incidence of the female component. So, to make a long story short, here's my dilemma, okay? We have already drafted regulations with the industry representatives to proceed with a nearshore gillnet fishery. There may be an allowance for trawling too, but you can't trawl within 2 miles of shore, so it would only give you a 1 mile band. But if you go into federal waters, then you're under a different management regime. That's our dilemma. You want to fish under the state regulations or out in the federal waters with a federal permit? So assuming that we proceed and get this tiny blockfish license and dealer permit for New Jersey waters, and assuming, and under Addendum 3, we have those substantial landings from 90 to 2000. So under a number of options, we could very easily get between 560 to 880,000 pounds allocated to New Jersey on an annual basis. Okay, so that's a good fishery. What are we going to catch? Here's my dilemma. If our trawl survey shows that within the near shore waters, and I'm talking up to 90 feet, 8 to 12 miles offshore, if they're all predominantly female, especially when we were designing the gillnet fishery in the spring and summer, okay, how will target, and these are, I have the size distribution data, so half of these are over 80 centimeters. So how will this increased fishing mortality essentially direct the fishery on mature female spiny dogfish? How will this interfere with the rebuilding of stock? Okay, so I'm scratching my head on that. Is it likely that New Jersey can develop a spiny dogfish fishery targeting predominantly male spiny dogfish? Marty Dawkins assures me he's got the answer for that. And then my third question is, does the coastal spiny dogfish stock assessment capture seasonal near-shore sex ratio data? And I don't know, you know, again, you got to start looking at the frequency, the number of samples taken by the spring and the fall crews of the National Marine Fisheries Service. Our whole effort is concentrated in those first three strata. Our whole effort. And is somebody from NEMAS going to talk today?
No, they can't. They're
okay. Well, when I saw their spring 2008 survey results, it pretty much confirmed what I was thinking. So it's like, you know, I thought it was crying wolf here for the last couple of years, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we're designing male-only fishery. So this is why I'm looking for your feedback, because we enjoyed a good directed fishery in the 90s. We stand to get, I would imagine, a pretty decent allocation under Addendum 3. And we want to have a commercial fishery, the recreational guys would be happy. We don't want to cause an environmental damage to the spiny dogfish stock. So, how do we proceed? Can we proceed removing this poundage of female spiny dogfish? I don't know. I'm looking for some feedback here.
Yes.
Okay. So I think we're committed to doing this. My fear is that under Addendum 3, everybody's slicing, you know, looking at 8 million pounds, and they want to know ahead of time, what am I going to get for my state, and I'm going to go out and get them. And it's like, does anybody really know like what kind of gear they're going to use, what size they're going to fetch? And that's kind of like where I'm looking ahead instead of just, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. These are our regs. Here's our law. We'll get 800,000 pounds. And then we'll see what happens down the road. That's my dilemma. Greg, please help me out.
What do you think we should target?
Put the question back to you. What do you think we should do? Well, I was talking to Marty at lunchtime, and he thinks that there are enough. Marty, can I speak for you on your behalf? Not letting out any secrets. He thinks that with the mesh size that they would be fishing, that they would be able to essentially get a predominant male catch and still get the poundage. It was a 3,000-pound trip on it. That's what we're proposing. So he thinks with, what, 5.5 inches, we have it presently written on a maximum 5.5 inches. He thinks, and my question to him was, but, you know, in all our samples, all we're seeing is females, so I'm perplexed.
There's two other, Chris and Mark. Is it doable? There's two fishermen also.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm happy. This is a timely forum.
Absolutely.
And Kevin has been involved in this, and other people from Barnegat Light in particular, and Marty, and how many meetings have we had developing this concept? So, and we're all set to go once we get the law passed and the regs adopted and get our allocation.
We were also looking at a 20 size diameter too. I don't recall what it is, but
was 90 mil?
Okay.
So we'll have to answer that too.
Okay, Greg, I see Mr. Fletcher, I think. Okay.
Let's don't call me any dirty words there. Peter, what size boats are you assuming that would fish on this fishery?
Or, I've referred to the Barnegat Light guys. You'll not see the Barnegat Light. I'm sorry?
Anywhere from 40 to 45 boats.
Okay, so can you guys go offshore farther?
Yes.
So, but your inshore survey is showing this almost all female.
Right.
So just by lowering the gill net, mesh size is not going to give you males.
They think there are enough of them around. I don't know.
No, I mean
they can't go out past 3 miles because once they do, they're outside the authority of this. They're under the regime of the federal government, and they essentially to participate in our state conceived fishery, they have to relinquish their federal permits, like goldfish permits.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're dedicated to fishing within under our agency allocation. So
it's similar to the problem that we have in North Carolina. Do you correct me if I'm wrong, but you know we just don't see males within the 3 miles, and so you'd have to go much farther out where it develops a male only fishery, and now you're in federal waters. So by lowering twine size, and we've been doing this for a number of years now, about 12 years, we've been using smaller mesh sizes. We don't catch males. We catch smaller females.
Well,
they're just not there because they school by sex and they're just not in shore.
Well, then this goes back to my first question. I mean, according to the signals from the stock assessment, we should not have a directed fishery on a female component, whether they're sexually mature or just below 80 centimeters.
That's right.
We shouldn't be doing that.
That's right.
Peter, the other question is,
At this point in time, and listen, Chris, I asked this to be put on the TC meeting that's happening in October, because I'm really, you know, scratching my head on this from when we first developed the concept. And, you know, I asked Harley Spear from Maryland, I said, well, how do you get, supposed to get 800,000 pounds? What kind of fishery are you going to have? Where are you going to have it? You're going to have a trawl fishery? Can you trawl in state waters? Can you have to go out in federal waters? What are you going to do? So it's a dilemma. You have two management regimes going along, and the fisherman has to decide which one am I going to subscribe to. And our guys are of the opinion that they want to take advantage of this 8 million pound quota. Dr. Pierce has a note of optimism, ASMSC. So I don't know if anybody's thinking ahead in North Carolina with what they envision. Or Maryland has a big stake in this too, because they had some rather substantial landings, which I understand came from Fenwick and trawl fishing back in the 90s.
Well, if you go with the state-by-state quota, which I hope they pass, then I would say the state of North Carolina, again, Dewey, correct me if I'm wrong, would feel that the sex was irrelevant and that they would go ahead and fish on the females. because that's what traditionally we fished on, and that's what's easy, most easy to obtain. And as you know, probably now in the wintertime, the North Carolina fishery is a pretty dangerous place to be, and a lot of times you can't even go out because of the weather. So as the gentleman in the back said, you know, I think a lot of states aren't concerned about whether or not they develop a male fishery or if they fish on the females as long as they get the quota. However, that being said, you know, it might be worthwhile approaching SNFC and saying, we want to develop a male-only fishery in federal waters. And how can we go about doing that to protect the females and yet get our quota and get that discussion going?
Well, I was at, when Mr. Lovgren brought up this, like hybridize the two systems so that, you know, it's economically feasible and you're catching male, you know, and you don't have this 3-mile dividing line, or in our case, 3-mile dividing line, I want you to cross it. You gotta declare. What am I in? What fishery am I in? So, I don't know where this is going, but we're committed to the gillnet fishery, as stated, and we'd be very happy to get 800,000 pounds and start a fishery on my data. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I guess we're likely that New Jersey will get a substantial amount of a quota from whatever option is selected, but there are quite a few options in there that would be very favorable for New Jersey and also favorable for those other states. So I don't anticipate us getting into any major arguments. I think it's going to be fairly easy, I think, just to come to terms and to agree with a specific set of state shares. This issue of male and female, what are they targeting, has come up for, in my state, 8 years, maybe longer than that, and we have been encouraged to have male-only fisheries. At least this goes back a few years when we were looking at a resource that was way below the target. And we did extensive sea sampling in our waters, and we did extensive port sampling, with fish coming into the different buyers in our state, and it's predominantly females, small percentage of males. And as a consequence of that, and we're faced with a choice. We either say, get the fishery, you know, we're going to extremely restrict it because of this concern about large females, or we're going to say to the fishermen, this is the state share, this is the amount that you have available to harvest, and it will be what it will be. And we will sample. We'll sample the landings to see what the age, we'll see what the length frequency is and what the sex composition is, and then take that information and feed it into the assessment process, and then see if through the assessment process we might eventually be able to get some advice that would be helpful relative to, well, what's the consequence of having a fishery of X amount that's 80% female or 70% female. But you're not really going to know what that percentage will be until the fishermen actually go out and begin to, you know, target dogfish, or take dogfish as a bycatch. That's the other issue, but maybe keep taking them as a bycatch. So I'd say it's, for practical purposes, it's irrelevant, and I would recommend to you that you don't get burdened with this concern, because I really think it's not necessary.
Okay. So I was hoping Dr. Pinata would weigh in on it. That's my fault.
I was born with 2 ears and 1 mouth, and use them as a portion of the RA. But I think there, like I said earlier, I think with the increase in the stock size, the opportunity for different kinds of policies, harvest policies, is open. So, having a cap that's related to females and then an open cap or a higher level for males may be an option that gets as some currency when it comes to, up at the
ASMC. I think we're going to go ahead and take our allocation and develop this fish.
Right, yeah. And I don't think there's any problem with that amount of, 800,000 pounds.
But you're talking about North Carolina now jumping in from like very low levels of harvest now to taking, they'll probably get more poundage than we will. And then you're talking about Maryland getting another chunk. So you're talking about, not a gold rush, but the door is open here to get a lot of poundage, and I just...
I think you're setting a good example on that. You know, it really should, this is the time to think about what this fishery should look like. Do you want to have a fishery that is a long-term sustainable aspect to it? What kinds of markets would that create? You know, how can you maximize revenue and profit, more importantly, from a fishery like this?
Okay, there we are discussing an allowance. We're calling it a tiny dogfish landing and possession limit, so that if you're trawling in the EEZ and you catch the bycatch, then you could traverse state waters and land the nymph's bycatch, because otherwise the trawling fishery is like, you know, we're going to have a 1 mile band. It's not enforceable, so we can't have a direct trawl fishery on tiny dogfish.
But they would fall under the 600 pound limit, sure.
Not if they're between 2 and 3
no,
miles.
No, outside.
Yes, yeah, outside they'd fall into the small trip limit. That gets a little dicey in horses. Jim had his hand up. Jim Lutner.
It's good to see the concern of the state over targeting the female dogfish specifically, okay? Dave and North Carolina said they're, it's pretty impossible to do in the state of waters, okay? I've had a problem with this inshore fishery since it started, okay?
What, the concept of?
No, it was in 2002 when Massachusetts started this inshore fishery.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because it closed out federal waters within a month. So the 600-pound bycatch was out the window for everybody who was federally registered. Every federally permitted boat could no longer bring in dogfish because Massachusetts is operating a state water fisheries. Now, I applaud Massachusetts for doing that because they were standing up to bad science coming out of the science center. Or a bad policy, I'm going to say, because it's policy-driven science. Okay? And I applaud the ASMFC for saying, we agree with an 8 million pound quota. And Purple, she comes right around and says, then I'm going to drop it down to 4 million pounds in federal waters. And federally permitted vessels are then hurt. Okay? Not only that, though, National Standard 8 is ignored then, reduction of bycatch. And what we need is for both groups to come to terms with what we're looking at. We're looking at now what is a rebuilt fishery. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned before the number 3,000 pounds. Okay? It was proposed at the council level. If you looked at a bycatch fishery, and I'm talking a bycatch fishery because that's what you have offshore waters, that allows 3,000 pounds retention of dogfish, that fishing mortality is taken up with the 8-point-something million pounds of female dogfish that are already counted as dead discards. Okay? So you can still meet your mortality objectives. That's why we ask for them to run those numbers. This is where we need to go with the dogfish fishery. Because what you're doing, creating this inshore fishery here, Point Pleasant, our last year of land-ins, before they shut that fishery down, we landed 3 million pounds, trawler caught fish, okay, in 4 months. All right? We ain't getting a pound of that. 800,000 pounds. We're not going to get a pound of that. That's not right. But we can't do it. And we're not going to give up our dogfish permit. So, this is nice as a little bridge until we get the ASMFC and the councils to work together. The ultimate goal should be reducing bycatch in federal waters by law and turning those bycatch into land-ins. That's what we need to do.
Okay. No argument there. But you can see where our current regulations, essentially, these bind us under the 4 million pound quota, and we don't have any fish. I see a lot of hands up. Mr. Fletcher, I think had his hand up before.
Having been a proponent of the male fishery and trying to get it through, I would suggest that New Jersey consider allowing your fishermen to land the female fish, whatever works the best for you. But to look at an end run around management by Mid-Atlantic Council and ASMFC and consider going to the Secretary of Commerce and saying under the Magnuson Act you were supposed to reduce bycatch. Currently, in the EEZ, X percentage of what's caught is our male fish.
Mm-hmm.
Thereby, perhaps coming out of this room today, the Secretary would consider allowing up to 20 million pounds of male goldfish to be landed and not counted towards any of this, because the science that is driving this was all driven on female fish. And it's time for the Mid-Atlantic Council and ASMFC to admit that we made a mistake. We did not consider the male fish. We followed the lead of whoever and went female biomass. So if New Jersey could come in and land your 5,800 pounds or whatever it comes out of the ASMFC, but then join in and say, we want the male fishery exempted from landings for 3 years as long as it does not pass 20 million pounds coastwise. That gives the industry something to experiment on and work on. It gives the processor some hope to develop the small fish market or a way to handle the small fish. But when the scientists come in and say that the processors cannot handle the small fish or the offshore boats cannot handle the small fish, I'm sitting there thinking that in the commercial fishing industry, anytime you put a dollar, the fishermen will find out a way to do it. And by allowing the male fishery, you will give us a time to find out. And then the other thing that needs to be driven home in this point is that most species, when you get more males than females, reproduction declines. So it's nice to say we're going to cut down on predatory effects and everything else. But the reproduction of the pups may be basically what term is cockroidism. We're having the males turn cannibalistic on the females. So it's a different aspect, but the main thing hopefully coming out of this is go straight to the Secretary for the allowance of male fish. And if New Jersey would join it, it would give your fishermen your money and then a chance to build it and maybe one of
them. Okay, yeah, our dilemma is not unique. Yeah, I've run out of my time to answer. This gentleman from North Carolina has been waiting patiently.
Sure.
One more.
thank you.
Dewey Emroyd. Go back to your regulation there, if you would.
Yeah,
that's existing. Well, the next one that you're proposing.
We're proposing.
When you talk about here the different fisheries that are going to go catch female fish, these fish are already being caught. What's happening to maybe the new state might say that they'll be spread out to other states? Also, why do you limit yourself to a 5.5-inch gill net?
That was a recommendation of the gill netters. Maximum of 5 gills.
I think the reason they were just they're trying to avoid the females with the smaller nets.
So yeah.
When this came up, that was 2 years ago when the males were.
We were under the impression that we're going to catch male dogs.
But
then we started getting our own data and said, no, we're
yeah,
not.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it. You know, and I think, someone might correct me wrong, but up in Massachusetts, they're 6.5-inch gill net. So there's no meaning to
that. So we don't want to go over 5.5 inches.
Well, that's just each his own. But, I mean, what this is looking at spreading out the fishing. But, you know, as we sit here today and fishermen, you know, sometimes we say this or this for each other, it should be more quota what we're going for instead of just limiting ourselves to this 8 million pounds. And, you know, you see the mess we're in here now when you've got two councils, Atlantic States, and now it's made fisheries, and they can't even get together on this stuff. It's almost like going out there to the Atlantic Ocean and getting a 5-gallon bucket out of the water and say, hey, look, this is our golf fish stock. I mean, there's the stock, and this is what we're taking out. Something we should be looking at is the discards, like Jim and a few others said. You know, maybe somebody turning in discards in the landings so they're not counted against or looking at that because they're somewhere around 10 million pounds. I wouldn't limit yourself on the females are being spread out.
Okay.
Probably the fishery instead of just one big fishery.
And Neil's just formed very kindly. I hope.
Peter, the other thing that I wanted to just say, I know we got to move on, you know, one of the situations that we're in right now, and I'm sure that most guys will agree, I'm sure you'll agree, that we're not in a position to be more conservative in the state of New Jersey on this particular issue. We've supported many things that I think are, you know, good management practices.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, you know, whether we're talking about flu or macro, whatever it may be, at this point we have no choice but to go ahead with a fishery, regardless of the possible male versus female issue. That's really the most, well, frankly, that's the situation we're in. We take voluntary measures on fluke bycatch and other things that other states don't do, and we just can't afford to do it anymore.